You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tomorrow morning after 7, Joy Cardine and her guests look at the First Amendment and a wide variety of freedom of speech issues that have been making headlines. That's tomorrow morning after 6 on the Ideas Network.
First, Governor Scott Walker signed the biennial budget today at an elementary school in Neenah. He vetoed 99 items in that budget. The budget was originally due on his desk on July 1st, but was held up for 11 weeks.
J.R. Ross is with us now to give us a rundown. He's the editor of WispPolitics.com. J.R., welcome back.
Hey, how are you guys doing this afternoon?
Not bad. Well, let's talk about this budget signing today. What happened at the ceremony?
Governor Walker began to lay the foundation of what he's going to tout the next several weeks, if not several months, about this budget. He's going to talk about what he calls historic investment in education, that property taxes on the typical Wisconsin home are going to be lower on the bill they get in 2018 than when they got in 2014, and that he's providing more opportunities from K-12 through the UW system, extending a tuition freeze. He's basically touting what he believes are the good things of this budget and beginning to message it as he works toward his reelection announcement sometime in November.
And we've been tracking the evolution of this budget for a long time here on Central Time, but the newest part is the vetoes as of today, the 99 of them. How come so many?
It's been about in line where he's been before, but a lot of it is, I think the things that really get a lot of attention are the education vetoes. So let's, you know, looking at the big picture of the budget, the $640 million roughly that would be added to K-12 spending is the centerpiece of this thing. But lawmakers wanted to do other things for education that Governor Walker was not comfortable with. One of them was we have things called low-spending districts. And what they are is you go back a couple of decades, we started going to a two-thirds funding formula for schools in Wisconsin. The state paid two-thirds overall, and the other third came from property taxes. Well, you kind of locked these districts into their spending limits per student back then, and some districts that were not spending as much got locked in, and they haven't been able to catch up. So Republicans in the Assembly particularly wanted to give them more room to collect more on property taxes to catch up. Walker wasn't comfortable with that because if you know anything about Scott Walker, is that he is almost obsessed with your property tax bill. He looked at that as a provision that would allow property taxes to go up. So he nixed it and said, look, there are some of these districts that would be affected that have gone to referendum and been denied. He doesn't want to see these districts raising more revenue from property taxes without voters having a say. So I think that's probably the biggest veto or most attention he's got so far in the vetoes is that one.
And what kind of reaction did that particular veto get, including among some fellow Republicans who might have been disappointed?
Some Republicans are very unhappy because they see that as an opportunity for these districts to catch up a little bit. In particular, like John Nygren, who is the co-chair of the Finance Committee that really shaped this budget for the legislature, he's pointed out that that would have been $90 million over 6 years for, I believe, about 200 districts, and that we're in a system where the state rates these schools, right, how they're performing. If you're rating them, you're not giving the resources that other districts are getting, how is that fair? That was one of his arguments. But again, for Walker, it's about that property tax bill. He's looking at the investment, again, which he calls historic, and K-12 going, hey, we're giving all this money, you know, that they can use that they didn't have before. I don't want to go that far on that piece.
Now, you mentioned that the governor calls the K-12 funding historic. Do you agree with that characterization?
Well, it depends who you talk to in the Capitol about that. I mean, yes, you know, the state of Wisconsin is putting more money into K-12 than it ever has. But the counter-argument has been, well, yeah, but if you go back to where we were in 2011, before Governor Walker and Republicans made these big cuts, where should we have been, you know, before that happened? And so the Democratic argument becomes, yes, it's a lot of money, but we haven't caught up to where we were before. So you're going to see a different message from Democrats about that, saying they're trying to find a way to say, yes, it's great to have this new investment in K-12 from Governor Walker, but he shortchanged us before, and we haven't caught up to where we should be or would have been if he hadn't done that 6 years ago. The question kind of becomes for Democrats, how effective can you be with that message and how receptive voters are to that? Because, again, Walker's got the easier one to make. You know, historic investment in K-12, period. That's a very short, simple, to-the-point line, right? For Democrats, is the yes, but. And it's a hard argument to make sometimes with people with their attention spans.
Talking to J.R. Ross right now, editor of WispPolitics.com, as we take a look at the state budget signed today by the governor, and also looking now at the vetoes, 99 vetoes there. Just talked a little bit about education. And, J.R., the governor also vetoed a state tax credit that helps restore historic buildings. What's the story behind that one?
Basically, if you go back to when this was created, it was seen like, okay, here's an option to kind of help spur development in historic areas of Wisconsin, especially in urban areas, to get things rolling. The problem became it was so popular, it took off and was much more expensive than they thought it was going to be. Walker sought to rein that in with his original budget. Lawmakers had a different approach. This one brings it back to being a more strict limit on how much can go out the door, because remember, when the tax credit is given out for a project, that's lost revenue for the state. It's less money for schools, for Medicaid, for governor operations, on down the line. So we kind of put a little bit of a pulled it back a little bit to keep that money in check.
What's your impact of the financial impact of that one?
Not really the exact numbers off my head, but it's not going to be as generous as it was before. Now the question kind of becomes, okay, what does this mean for these projects? One, what comes first, the project or the tax credit? Did the tax credit induce behavior or did it reward behavior? What happens in the next 2 years? Will there be people who say, well, it's still a good deal, we'll do it anyway, or will there be fewer projects? That's kind of the unknown of these things. What's the incentive? Taking away some of the incentive, is still enough out there to get people to do these projects in largely urban areas.
Now let's talk about the prevailing wage. That had some action from the governor in this budget. What's the latest?
So Governor Walker proposed originally in his budget to repeal the prevailing wage on state projects. Now, go back 2 years ago, the state already repealed it on local projects, on schools, local governments, that kind of thing. This is a provision to extend that to state projects. In the budget that lawmakers passed, there was an effective date, I believe, of September 1st of 2018. There were three Republicans in the state Senate who were unhappy with some provisions in the budget and said they couldn't vote for this budget unless they got some concessions. Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, said he's not going to take up the budget again. Once they passed out of his house, he was done with it. So those three said, okay, Governor, we need these vetoes to, you know, win our support. And without at least two of them, they couldn't pass the budget. They get these vetoes in. One of them is this veto from Walker that takes that implementation date from September 1st of 2018 and basically is, as soon as the budget takes effect, which is shortly after the governor signs it, now that goes away. That means that there will not be any more of a setting of a wage for these projects, which proponents say saves the state money on this work, and opponents say means that these construction jobs aren't paying as much and aren't providing enough family-supporting wages as they were before.
And how do you see that changing things for Wisconsin workers? Obviously, it moves the timetable up quite a bit, but big picture.
Big picture, we're still kind of figuring out the full impact of what that meant for local projects. Now, there's some numbers out there, but it's only a year and a half, 2 years old, so it's kind of hard to know exactly a good feel of what big picture. But Democrats argue we're already seeing lower wages for people on these projects. Proponents can say, hey, we're saving money on them. It may take a while to get the full feel of what's going on, but there's some evidence on both sides of their arguments.
Now, another action item from the governor's veto pen. The governor vetoed the funding to fill five vacant positions on the State Elections Commission. What's happening with that?
If I remember this correctly, those positions were already, I think, vacant. There was some federal money for that went away. They wanted to restore funding for it. His argument is they can do the work with what they've got. So that was part of that rub, if I remember correctly, about that one.
And we're talking right now to J.R. Ross from WixPolitics.com about the biennial budget that Governor Walker just signed today, also looking at the long list of vetoes.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the state budget, especially in the big areas like transportation and education? They've been talking about funding for local schools. How is your local school doing when it comes to the state budget? What would you like to see, if anything, change? Are you a local school administrator? How does all of this affect you? You can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Also, how do you think it's going to affect the race for governor coming up next year? Call in again, 800-642-1234.
We'll continue the conversation and get to your calls in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're picking up our conversation now with J.R. Ross from WisPolitics about the budget that Governor Walker just signed into law today, including 99 vetoes.
You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the news on the prevailing wage law, on education funding, transportation funding, and how do you see it all fitting into the race for governor and the state legislature next year? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org.
And we go to our callers now. We have Kyle with us first from Muskego. Kyle, hi.
Hi. My comment was on prevailing wage, particularly in construction, and how repealing prevailing wage isn't going to save taxpayers any money, or how I don't see how it could save any taxpayers any money. And the reason why is in most construction, new or older, the labor only averages about 12-13% of the budget. But of that 12-13% of the budget, maybe only 6% or less of that goes towards the actual workers. And let me explain why. I worked in construction. I was union. I made $23 an hour as an apprentice, but I was put on jobs with non-union workers who were making $16 an hour on average without, even though they had more years of experience because they weren't union. However, the company that was doing the construction was billing the customer $125 per guy per hour that they were there, regardless of whether they were union or non-union or their years of experience. And that's kind of how construction labor is budgeted.
Kyle, thanks a lot for that. And got some experience there in the construction industry. J.R. Kyle saying that due to the complicated way that the labor payment goes and then the billing goes, it's not going to save that much money, the prevailing wage veto.
During this debate on the budget, I apologize for which state, but Democrats during the debate brought up one state where it did away with prevailing wage. Again, I'm sorry I'm blanking on it, but said they quoted a leader in that state saying it didn't really save any money. So that was part of their argument. But again, with this experience in Wisconsin, I haven't got a good feel about it yet, and it could take a while to play out. But they did make that point during the debate that it was, in their minds, it was going to be a big money saver for Wisconsin.
All right, Kyle, well, thank you for calling in with your perspective. I appreciate that. And let's go to Pam now in Northwest Wisconsin. Pam, hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to ask a guest, sorry, I forgot your name, but
JR,
with the educational budget, could you please explain to the listeners what portion of that educational money is actually going to the voucher system, which in many cases goes to private parochial schools? And I've had many conversations with people who have no idea that taxpayer money is going to religious schools.
And Pam, thank you for the call. I don't know if JR, if you have those numbers in your back pocket, but this has been a flashpoint in Wisconsin.
I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, but this has been one of the things that Republicans try to address, especially with the Milwaukee program, is what the people have called the Milwaukee flaw, in that property taxpayers are picking up the cost, essentially. So they've been working on that to try and address that. But yes, there's definitely a chunk of that money that is going to choice schools, because voucher students, as part of state law now, if schools get a per pupil increase in funding, same happens with the voucher amount. So that is going to be a flashpoint. Now, nothing happened with this budget is that right now in Milwaukee and Racine, so there are three separate voucher programs. There's Milwaukee, which is the oldest one, Racine, and then statewide. Milwaukee and Racine have an income limit of 300% of the federal poverty level. The statewide program is being bumped up to 220%, so you're going to have to see more kids eligible from a higher income level family. There's still a cap on how many kids can enroll each year from different schools, but there's a continued expansion of this program that's been going on Republicans, and I believe it's 1% more of that cap every year until it goes away after 10 years.
Okay, Pam, well, thank you for that, and that's a conversation that will continue to play out here in Wisconsin. And, JR, another look at a veto quickly before we see if we have time for another caller. Some change in oversight for for-profit colleges.
Mm-hmm. So Education Board goes away, but the Walker administration argues there's still going to be oversight from the state. You know, part of what Governor Walker has tried to do, and whether you agree with him or not, is in his mind streamline government. He sees that as redundancy, that board versus having the state, you know, the administration is a redundancy. Obviously, if you're not a fan of Scott Walker, you don't trust administration to properly have oversight of those for-profit colleges. So you see this as a weakening of the oversight system. And, you know, it's one of the arguments that you're going to hear as this goes forward.
And let's take another quick comment from Cindy in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. I think this budget is a disaster. It's borrowing $400 million. We're going to be giving $300 billion to the Taiwanese con job. And there is nothing in this budget, and has not been since Walker came in, that addresses public transportation. We need some kind of a train system in this state to keep up with the rest of the states. And this is something that just never gets addressed with the Republican budgets, yeah. Public transportation.
Cindy, thank you so much for that. JR, you were starting to say something there.
Even Republicans who want to put a positive spin on this will tell you that the big failure of this budget was transportation. And they'll also tell you it's queued up to be a problem going forward, depending on what happens next fall. And why I say that is 2 years ago, there was some chafing by Republican lawmakers because they wanted to see if there's a way to raise revenues for roads, because we are borrowing, we're borrowing more money every budget to pay for road projects, and that borrowing is eating up more and more of the money coming into the transportation fund. I believe by the second year of this budget, if I got my numbers right, like 22 cents of every dollar that we take in from your gas tax, registration fee, that kind of stuff, is going just to pay off the interest on our borrowing. That's not really sustainable in some people's minds. So 2 years ago, there was chafing about that. They borrowed some more money and pushed it off, saying, okay, maybe in two more years, we'll figure something out. This budget, Governor Walker laid a marker early on. Well, okay, he would veto a gas tax hike unless there was an offsetting tax cut, right? But as it got closer to the budget, he moved those goalposts and said, no gas tax hike, no registration fee, period. So they ended up in a situation where, again, they borrowed more money, they created this new fee on hybrid electric cars, but there's no long-term fix. And probably lawmakers will be honest with that there's no long-term fix. The issue becomes, all right, 2018, if Governor Walker's reelected, all right, let's just assume that...
We've got about 5 seconds left, JR.
In 2 years from now, it's the same dynamic with Republican lawmakers and Governor Walker, and Walker saying he's not going to raise this stuff because he's going to run for president again someday. He won't run for president, have his own gas tax hike. So now
it'll be back to the starting block. JR, we got to leave it there. Thank you for joining us.
Anytime. Take care.
That was JR Ross, editor of wishpolitics.com, joining us to look at Governor Walker's long list of vetoes and the state budget.